Opus Dissonus presents Studio Masterclasses with Arthur Semilva.
Hi, I am Arthur Semilva, and this is the masterclass on Franz Liszt's Sonata in B minor, based on the book Scientific System of Interpretation or Musical Hermeneutics. For more information, you can access my website. By far, this is the most important sonata written after Beethoven and the most important Liszt piano work. The only sonata written in the same quality by this time is Julius Heubich's sonata, which is dedicated to Liszt, and it is highly inspired by Liszt's B minor sonata. Schubert's Fantasy Opus 15 is the main source of inspiration for the aesthetics of this sonata, and we can easily notice similarities in melodic lines between Weber Freischütz and Alkan Quasi-Faust from his Grand Sonata, and several other examples are available. Thanks to the great work which Liszt dedicated to develop the concept of symphonic poem, there are several musicians and critics who often try to make this sonata look like similar to Liszt symphonic poems, trying to give a programmatic meaning related to Faust, to Liszt's personal life, or to biblical texts. Of course, public is free to imagine anything they want, but perpetuate these mistakes is an unnecessary allegory for the serious study of such work. No doubt, it's very important to mention the history behind the composition process. Liszt probably started to compose the sonata around 1849. There are some very interesting evidences for this, and as we can see in the writings by Gerhard Carter and Martin Adler. The work was finished in 1853, and the first performance of the sonata happened only in 1857 by Hans von Billow. The premiere happened in Berlin, and it was not well received by the public. The traditions around the performers of the sonata show us quite different aspects when in comparison with the music score. I mean, the interpretations are quite similar in adopting the same mannerisms, the speed of what Franz Liszt really wrote. For understanding better why this happens, I recommend you to listen to the masterclass I made on Beethoven's Grande Sonata Pathétique, Opus 13, which is available at the website opusdissonus.com.br. There, I explain about the problems of some traditions and how they are perpetuated. One last detail needs an explanation. Arthur Friedheim, who was a Liszt student, have planned a new edition of Liszt Sonata around 1905, where he would give some notes about the information he got with Liszt himself while studying the sonata with his master in 1880s. Of course, this edition would represent one of the final accepted versions of by Liszt, which by no means is clearly an interesting way to make the music interpretation. And very interesting to say, this Friedheim's version is far different from the interpretations all pianists have been doing in the last century. On the other hand, as a pianist myself, I decided to get back to the original Liszt's intention in the interpretation, which is also completely different from the standard tradition of this last century. One may wonder why Liszt accepted or even made a revision on the sonata while teaching Friedheim. To me, it seems clear that the bad reception made him think about a simplification of the playing textures in order to give the public the impression the piece is very well connected. Somewhat similar to what he did with his own Transcendental Etudes and Paganini Etudes too. The fact we must not forget, Liszt knew very well how to write a music score. He easily used a lot of details to explain his ideas. Indeed, he used new signs to explain different rubatos and other effects. So the main point is, The revision was not made because he didn't knew how to write. It was made because he simplified the interpretation requirements. There is also the statement by Liszt where he says, "That is the way I threw the composition when I wrote it," which was said after Friedheim's performance. To me, it seems more a way to praise the student for making a very good interpretation, which can be easily enjoyed by the public, than something meaning he didn't know how to write these in the past. History has already proven this would be wrong if intended by Liszt. If I'm not wrong, the composer and pianist Ferruccio Bosoni once stated something meaning that it was necessary a kind of Darwinist evolution in the pianists to be able to perform the sonata correctly. And in part, I really agree. The problem is that this evolution takes almost 170 years to really happen. In our first moment, we have a false evolution through the solutions who hardly were connected to the original sound meanings intended by Liszt. And this makes clear why Liszt was the most important composer-pianist of piano literature, opening a new world to all the other composers-pianists of the future. We have four themes, and Liszt have developed a very effective compositional process. The opening presents us twice the same note played in three octaves, and then the melody starts with the same notes and make a seventh and a descending scale. Then we have a repetition, which shows us the same in other mode. Maybe the most famous characteristic of this opening is the use of spiccato. And here starts the need of a deep observation about the work as it was played during the last century. Friedheim called our attention to a different way of playing these notes in order to make the effect of pizzicati. This is not the way I play it, but I think it's quite interesting to make the example. The Allegro Energico asks us again for a spiccato, opening the second theme. And here we notice Liszt's request, the difference between spiccato and staccato. The third theme also ends with a spiccato, which is not respected by the traditional misleading interpreters. Very important to keep the articulation of the triplets. And here. It repeats a lot during the piece. Bar 17 and 18, there is another mistake in the tradition. The tempo of the measure is always removed from its original intention, from this to this. That means basically all pianists play the weak tempo as a strong tempo. With this theme, we can understand better why Liszt used marcatos here, which often are not played as marcatos. Liszt called our attention to the use of different octaves as singing points, starting at bar 72. It would sound like this. have then the spiccato with martellato. Here the melody is not connected with the octaves. Entering the grandiose theme, we have the first pedal indication. This is the first time Liszt writes the pedal. Anyway, of course, that doesn't mean that you must not use it before. Spiccatos are back. Anyway, very often traditional pianists do not play this as written. Bar 149. I strongly believe this must not be played in staccato. If Liszt was lazy, he would write the word staccato instead of adding staccati at each note in the left hand, and he didn't make any of these options. So clearly, this is not staccato. Bar 155. Often the high note is lost during this bar. Two bars before, we can read l'accompagnamento piano, which gives us a right hand at mezzo piano, so the pianissimo at bar 155 gives us the necessary contrast to make the long note sound as it is written. Staccato can be seen at bar 192, but hardly one can hear this in an interpretation. There are no tempo changes, but often it is played very fast. Big mistake. Also, not much attention is given to the left hand rests in places like this. Bar 221. Very important to notice the spiccati in order to do not use pedal at this point. Second theme appears here. Often the first note is not well played since it do not keep sounding as the theme suggests. Incalzando and non legato. No pedal is necessary. Here a wild texture. Fortissimo and spiccati in the left hand chords. Unfortunately, it is always played with pedal, which is clearly a wrong use here. Bar 286, staccato and rest before next theme is back. Grandioso theme is back, this time in spiccati and almost like an alla marcia. Again, the wrong use of pedals here is what happens in the standard misleaded interpreters. Bar recitativo. Martellati and staccati leads to the right interpretation possibilities. Usually, none of these are presented as written. Here again, a rest, which even without the fermata would be long. Anyway, often it is too short in misleading playing. This rest often is heard. Anyway, the same doesn't happen at several bars like this. Bar 362, a small rest in the left hand. At bar 367, we have the Compassione, and clearly it is a similar moment to Grandioso Tem. Anyway, there are martellati and spiccati in the bass notes, which makes me select for not using the pedals in the first beat, and which gives a great contrast when these indications stop to appear. Bar 371, Friedheim suggests octaves in trills. Easily, we will not notice these rests in mislead interpretations at bar 403. Bar 453, we are back to the first time. If I'm not wrong, Leslie Howard suggested playing this at the tempo andante sostenuto. I disagree, because since bar 410 we have indications like poco a poco rallentando, then smorzando at bar 431 and perdendosi at bar 449. And no indication like a tempo is present anywhere at this point. So in my opinion, the effect of these, let's say, 43 bars ends in something quite similar to a lento assai. The fugato at Allegro Energico is rich in the use of accents. This is very important, especially remembering what was told about articulation in the beginning. Bar 509, Friedheim suggests the pianists to have the French horn in mind while playing this. Trombone when playing this. This kind of concept of orchestration gives us a glimpse of Liszt's music intentions behind the writing. He is orchestral at the piano, no doubt. At this point, at bar 532, Friedheim suggests his own way of playing this trill using both hands. At the più mosso, a very interesting effect which was forgotten by the misleading tradition. This is one of the few moments where Liszt indicates how to use the pedal. Often it is played like this. But Liszt wrote this. Several pianists play an octave here. Making a powerful sound. In a way, Liszt wrote mezzo forte, making this octave a mistake. In the presto, again, the staccato is very important. Accents in these octaves according the beats is very helpful to understand the intention. Prestissimo, again, the left hand shows martellati and spiccati. Back to the grandioso theme, the spiccati give us a new texture. Bar 707. Friedheim suggests playing tremolos in the left hand, probably something which Liszt accepted or even suggested him to do. And a wild cut is made at the bar 710. And then we have a very long rest. There is no excuse for using pedals in this last chord. Andante sostenuto themes appears again, and several rests are not noticed. Bar 737, a silence in the left hand while a big chord is kept. Curiously, the tempo allegro moderato often changes at this point in most part of the misleading interpretations, probably because of it un poco rallentando. Anyway, only when at bar 750 we really shall change the tempo to lento assai. And finally, the last note. The last chord is supposed to be kept for much more time than the other chords, since there is a fermata. And only then we have the last note. With this, the intention is not make other pianists playing this piece like me, but playing without repeating the old mistakes which were made because of the problems pointed in the scientific system of interpretation or musical hermeneutics. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this masterclass. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me at the website opusdissonus.com.br. Thanks again.